for the best play-by-play of area preps basketball action. It's the Big AM 1380, WBEL.
743 of the Big AM 1380. The book Everything I Know I Learned from Rock Stars reveals decades of music reporting and candid conversations with 50 influential artists. Among them, this is good stuff here. We're talking Roy Orbison, Queen, ELO, Grace Slick from Jefferson Airplane, Jefferson Starship, just plain Starship until she left because she had to record Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now. Fleetwood Mac, Dire Straits, Go-Go's, Van Halen. I could go on and on and on and on and on. This is a great retrospective, if you will. Raw and real. It's a captivating personal time capsule, guaranteed to fire the imagination of any music fan. The author of that tome joins us right now. His writing career includes ventures in journalism, marketing, public relations, music promotion, and broadcasting. And he's a Chicago native living in Texas near Austin now. And he's had a varied life. And through this varied life, he's run into a variety of different rock stars, and he made this book possible. Everything I Know I Learned from Rock Stars. And he joins us right now on the morning program on the Big AM 1380 WBEL. We are welcoming to the program Bill Page. Bill, thanks for joining us, sir. We appreciate it.
Ted, it's my pleasure. I'm glad to talk to you this morning.
Yeah, and that's...
Title is quite a mouthful, I understand, but, you know, people can Google it easily enough and find out where they can... You know, read the book, I guess.
And the other thing is, too, it's easy to remember. That's sort of, you know, because everybody knows about that book, Everything I Know I Learned from Kindergarten. You just throw in rock stars. It's a lot more fun learning stuff from rock stars than from kindergarten, I'm thinking, Bill.
Exactly. And I thought I might have a little bit of a problem with that title, but it turns out it's commonly used by all kinds of people. So.
Yeah.
There was no copyright infringement.
That's good news. Yeah, and basically something like that can have pluses and minuses if everything you learn is from rock stars. But, you know, this is, and you ended up picking up this information from this variety of people, I'm thinking, from a number of different sources, because we ended up, you know, doing a little capsule resume here about all the things you've done, and you probably run into these rockers in all different facets in your life.
Well, that is the kind of the cool thing. I mean, one of the things you learn about people, or you learn about, you know, from rock stars, is that they are just people. They're normal folks doing a creative job, maybe, but they still have to do the same things to live that everybody else does. And they want to be treated the same, and they like normal parts of life just like everybody else. So
yeah.
That was kind of one lesson that nothing was off limits to talking with these people. They're, you know, you could throw them any kind of a question, and if they hadn't heard it before, they would laugh and say, "Well, that's a new one on me," and they would go ahead and try to do their best. But it was always enjoyable talking to folks, because I enjoy the creative endeavor, and I enjoy songwriting and all those kinds of things. So it was never any problem to talk to a musician about their craft.
Yeah, and that's you brought up a very good point. In fact, I ended up talking a few years back with a fellow author of your publisher, Eckhart Press, that has a very popular book out. In fact, it's going into re-release because he's being inducted into the National Radio Hall of Fame, John Records Landecker. And he ended up mentioning exactly what you said, because he talked to some of the biggest names in the music business and also show business. It didn't have to be music. He was talking with actors and all that. And he said, you know, they put their pants on the same way that we all do. And I just asked him the questions that I would ask anybody, you know, and that's really the way you have to be able to conduct these things, because you talk to some big names along the way. When you're talking, you know, with, you know, people like Roy Orbison, the folks at Fleetwood Mac, they actually had the biggest selling album of all time at one time. All these different people, you've had quite the exposure to these people. And was there ever a time you really felt some sort of, you know, a real sense of anxiety about meeting somebody?
Not really. I mean, you mentioned Roy Orbison, and that was definitely one of those experiences where I was a little bit in awe and shared that with Roy Orbison, and he put me at ease and said, you know, nothing to be excited about, just me and you talking. And but that was, he was the Oh Pretty Woman was the first record that I ever bought in my life.
That's great.
I was nine or ten years old, and I loved his, you know, I loved his music, and he was it, all through his career, and he did so many things. It was an honor to speak to him. It was sort of interesting. It was in the part of his career where maybe things weren't going so great for him. He was yet to join the Traveling Wilburys. He was yet to be discovered for that public television special, Black and White Years, with Bruce Springsteen and Elvis Costello and Bonnie Raitt and everybody. Mm-hmm. So he was sort of in a little bit of a lull. But still, he was very generous and open about talking about his life and his career, as tragic as it was.
Where did you encounter most of these people? Because the one thing you mentioned, it's encounters framed by memorable stories and anecdotes from both sides of the concert stage. Now, I'm thinking backstage at concerts would be one place, but I have a feeling you met these people in all sorts of different venues, Bill.
Yeah, we did a lot of things in Chicago, in Chicago hotel rooms, basically. Mm-hmm. But when people would come through town, I remember talking to Van Halen about the first week they'd ever been out of California, sitting in a Holiday Inn room. A lot of it was in Holiday Inns.
Really?
That's where the musicians traveled, and that's where they stayed. I did get to go on some fun junkets. There's a story about me going to New Orleans to interview Queen, and a story about going to Atlanta, Georgia for Electric Light Orchestra. And Joe Jackson and I first hooked up in Philadelphia. So there was a little bit of travel involved, but mostly everything took place when I was freelance writing in Chicago.
Yeah, we're talking with Bill Page. He's the author of Everything I Know I Learned from Rock Stars, joining us on the morning program on the Big AM 1380. Now, you ended up, I know that one of the outlets you ended up getting a lot of the information that you put into this book from was the days when you were ended up doing some writing for music publications. If I'm not mistaken, Billboard was one of them. And so really, was that one of the primary ones when it came to being able to meet up with a number of these artists, Bill?
Well, I don't know. Billboard was a publication that I wrote for a couple of times as a freelancer.
Okay.
I did one long article on Journey for them, and then I did some acts to watch profiles for them a few years later. I also wrote a little bit for the Chicago Sun-Times.
Okay.
But the value in these articles, Ted, I think, is that most of them were published in small weekly or monthly publications in the Midwest. And you know what happens with those. It was all pre-internet. And in a week or in a month, they became canary cage liner. So, you know, a lot of people maybe didn't even have a chance to read these articles when they were first published. I venture to say most people didn't. So they've been sitting in a box, deteriorating for years, and I figured it was time to get them out, put them in some kind of a digital form, and let people enjoy them, you know. Many people weren't even alive when they were published the first time, probably.
Yeah, because I just remember a number of different little fanzines along the way, or you know, publications about local music scenes. One I remember from our area up here was the Mad City Music Sheet. It told about everything that was going on musically in Madison. It had an awful lot of stuff about Cheap Trick in it, and a number of other acts from like around Madison, Milwaukee, ventured into Chicago every once in a while. So that was probably, you know, there were probably a number of them around. I would probably say like in the late 70s, even into the early 80s when the new wave thing was starting around. So there, you had plenty of outlets if you were a freelancer to be able to distribute those articles to. But yeah, but the thing is you had to make contact with these artists. And now how many of these artists were, like you mentioned about Van Halen. They were just making their first tour, one of their first times out of California when you talked to them at the Holiday Inn. Were a lot of these just starting out at the time? With Roy Orbison, that wouldn't be the situation, or for that matter, probably with ELO, too. Fleetwood Mac had been around for a while. But with many of them, were they just getting their feet underneath them when they were talking with you?
Yeah, so I got a lot of people, on the upswing of their careers. But that said, I also talked to a lot of people that had been in the business for a while who continue to be in the business. One prominent example would be Nils Lofgren. Mm-hmm. He was a fine solo artist and had a bunch of albums out. He was only 26 years old at the time, and now he's had a 20-year career as a guitar player with the E Street Band and Bruce Springsteen. So, I caught people at different stages of their career. The band Sparks, for example, they'd been together 10 years.
Right.
But, here it is another 20 years later, and they're still making music and still, on the cutting edge of music. So it's fun to see the things that people saw, Dire Straits, David Knopfler, Mark Knopfler's brother, has a quote in the book about that he didn't think he'd ever want to play to more than a few thousand people at a time because it wouldn't be fair to the poor guys in the back row,
Mm-hmm.
And now, of course, Dire Straits has been a band that has played to multi thousands of people at any given time. So, and Jeff Lynne from ELO, that's another example of a person who he had all these hits. ELO, as you pointed out, had a dozen or so top 10 hits at this point. He still was lacking a little bit of confidence in his songwriting.
Really?
Which I found interesting. Yeah.
And it's interesting because obviously Jeff Lynne evolved into somebody who has become a very respected member of the music community through his production efforts. You mentioned about Roy Orbison. He ended up producing and writing tunes for that final album of his, working with him with the Traveling Wilburys, producing Tom Petty. You could go on and on and on about all the different projects that Jeff Lynne was a part of, including the Beatles anthology, which leads to the great quote that I heard from somebody. Jeff Lynne made ELO sound like the Beatles, and he made the Beatles sound like ELO. So...
that's the producer's dilemma. How do you produce somebody without putting your stamp on it?
Mm-hmm.
And there's probably a few people in the book who address that topic as well.
Indeed. What is one, the one meetup that you had? I know you mentioned about Roy Orbison, but one that you just said, wow, this is a great get, and I just love this time that I spent with this individual, or this group, for that matter.
Well, Todd Rundgren is one of my favorite artists, and I've only had a couple of formal sit-downs with him. But, I don't know, to sit down with somebody whose music that you really admire and have listened to a great deal was always a privilege for me, and... I enjoyed talking to Todd, even though sometimes he can be a little bit difficult of a subject. And, I guess another one would be Lindsey Buckingham from Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah.
Because he really resurrected that band from the ashes of obscurity. And I think that talking to him about his solo work was really a fun interview too.
Yeah, because he's a very talented writer, singer, and guitarist as well. That's for certain.
And he's a good talker, So it's always fun to talk to somebody who likes to talk. If you find yourself like doing radio down in Texas here, a few years ago I had the occasion to talk to the great Texas songwriter Guy Clark on
yeah.
the air, and he was He was a little reticent about answering, questions, and rightly so. He'd been doing it a long time, and didn't suffer fools lightly. I eventually got him to open up a little bit, but it's always challenging to find the key that unlocks the door to their interest in continuing to talk to you or to talk to you at any depth.
Yeah, that's when you got to put your dentist hat on. You got to start pulling teeth at that point, that's for certain.
Well, either that or just kind of find the way in. I mean, mm-hmm. everybody's got a thing that they do love to talk about, that they are passionate about. And if you can get an artist talking about that, then they're and show some understanding or some empathy of their interest in that, then you have a better chance, I think, of getting them to open up in other areas.
Yeah. You see, and Bill just ended up changing my analogy from a dentist hat to a miner's helmet. So there you go. Bill Page, he's the author of...
It All Takes Light.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. Bingo. Everything I Know I Learned from Rock Stars. And by the way, the subtitle is Conversations 1975 to 1995. An interesting book. He joins us to talk about it on the Big AM 1380 WBEL. If people want to find out more about the book, Bill, where'd you send them?
We can go to Eckhart's Press, Eckhartz Press.com, and it is prominently featured at the top of the page there.
You know, and there's one thing I wanted to mention and talk to you about, because I was going to do it at the top, and I totally forgot about it. It had to do with... a record album you held on for a while, and it belonged to a library. Explain yourself, sir.
Well, yes, I had to, I figured if everything was all sunshine and lollipops in the book, people would not buy it, so I had to put a little bad boy stuff in there, and I admit to being a little bit of a kleptomaniac when I was young, and a record by the... innovative avant-garde composer Harry Partch wound up in my record collection 40 years ago because I took it out of the Arlington Heights Memorial Library and failed to ever return it. And so I pounded my chest and said several mea culpas and apologized for removing that record without authorization, and in an effort to sort of set the slate clean, I took the album back a couple of weeks ago to the library, returned it to the library with my apologies, and hopefully they will be able to sell it for big bucks at their next Friends of the Library auction to sort of offset any problems. It was just a little bit, you know, I'd been doing public relations, Ted, and stuff like that all my whole life. So it was just a way to do a little PR stunt that was kind of light and fun, and
sure.
The library fortunately they understood what I was trying to do, and they had fun with it as well. They turned it into a message to their users to not be afraid if you happen to keep a book overdue from the library for too long. Don't be afraid to bring it back. There's not going to be some horrible, compensation that you have to pay. These things happen, and the library people were very fun about the whole thing.
Yeah, I was going to call a local library here and find out what the fine would have been for holding on to a record for 40 years, but the problem is nobody has vinyl in their selections anymore, so I couldn't do the math.
Well, nobody has vinyl in their collections anymore, and the folks at the Arlington Heights Memorial Library told me they tried to figure it out, but gave up.
Okay.
So
well, you can only take things like this so far. Bill, this was a pleasure. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Ted. I hope you enjoy the book, and would love to talk to you again sometime.
That sounds great. I would appreciate that, sir. It would be great. 801 at the Big AM 1380.